WGTD is actually located right between Milwaukee and Chicago, so our listeners are especially interested to hear all that you have to say about the wonderful city of Chicago, with whom you have such a close relationship. One thing in particular I think is especially interesting is when you say something about Chicago audiences. You say Chicago audiences just can't be fooled by a stand-up comic. In other cities, people sort of laugh where they're supposed to laugh, but people in Chicago only laugh when something is funny. Any idea why that is, and also how you've experienced that yourself?
I don't know why it is. I just know it is. I know that you can't fool a Midwest audience as you can fool other audiences, say a San Francisco or New York audience, because there are certain buzzwords that, like Kafka, you know. If you can work Kafka into it, you generally, a New York audience will laugh. And also putting on airs. People always say, well, you seem like pretty much like you were, you know, when you first started out. And I said, well, we have this thing in the Midwest about putting on airs, you know, and don't act like something you're not, you know.
So you think that's part of why you've sort of stayed so true to yourself, that because Chicago audiences just wouldn't have tolerated much of anything else?
Well, that, and I had a wife who kept me grounded and never let me really get too full of myself.
Very good. I know the feeling. you have also, among other things, given some of the credit for your particular wonderful, refreshing brand of comedy to some of the work which you did in law school, and in particular, an appreciation for the precise word. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, for instance, in the best example I can think of in a routine, which is one of the original routines that I started out with, submarine commander, and it's a routine on a man who, especially in service or in a large corporation, it's an example of the Peter principle. He has advanced fully two or three levels beyond his competency, and he's in charge of the submarine, and he's recalling for the crew this memorable trip that they're just ending, and he's congratulating them on the 2 minutes that they just cut off the record for surfacing, firing at the towed target, and then resubmerging, and he's congratulating on it's a new record. They took 2 minutes off the previous record, and he said at the same time, I don't slight in any way the contribution made by the men we had to leave on deck. I think they had a lot to do with the 2 minutes we were able to cut off the record, and I doubt if any of us will soon forget their somewhat stunned expressions as we watched them through the periscope. So I think slight is just the right word, and stunned expressions is just the right word for. I think I took that with me from law school. It's one of the few things I ever took from law school.
We're glad that you did. You also talk about how comedians have to be at heart anti-authority, subversive in some sort of way. It's interesting for you to say that because, of course, those probably aren't the first couple of terms which most people would gravitate towards in trying to describe you or your brand of comedy. I mean, other people have been more obviously subversive. In what way has the work you've done been subversive in the way you're talking about?
Well, it's in there. It's very subtle, but it's in there. For instance, when I did the retirement party, and that was really based on my experience when I was an accountant, and I worked for an insurance company, and because I first did that, and someone wrote me a letter, and they said, that they were offended that I was making fun of of Charlie Bedloe, who was receiving the watch after 50 years with the company, and who was he was Blotto all the time. And I wrote back and explained to him that I wasn't making fun of Charlie. I was making fun of the system that made him get Blotto every day to get through the day. That's the only way he could get through the day. And again, in the submarine commander, it's making fun of the large corporation or the military. And then Abe Lincoln, of course, is making fun of a revered former president. So there is that element. It may be understated, but it's in. I think it's in almost every routine.
We're speaking with Bob Newhart about his wonderful new memoir called I Shouldn't Even Be Doing This and Other Things That Strike Me as Funny. You talk about how, especially in the first years of your career, you were writing almost all of your material in a vacuum, not really knowing if it was ever going to be performed. Do you think that was a helpful thing in a sense, that you were writing it in that way? Did it give you maybe a certain sort of a freedom?
Yeah, I suppose it was, Greg. It was. Ed Gallagher and I had a syndicated radio program, which was eminently unsuccessful. We finally wound up costing us money to do it, and then Ed got an offer for a job in New York. So I was kind of on my own. Either I had to find another partner or do it as a single, and even though I had no outlet for it, I would see something and it would strike me funny. And I had to write it down. I had to get it down on paper before I forgot it. Even though I never knew where I was going to ever have a chance to perform it.
Hmm. Those routines, some of them at least, came to light and were shared on PBS in the wonderful American Masters special they did about you. That must have really felt pretty cool, that a show that devotes itself to people like Leonard Bernstein devoted its resources to celebrating you and your career.
Exactly, and it was. And I don't know that it was so much a salute to me as it was a salute to the role of comedy and the role that comedy plays in our lives. And how important comedy is to our lives.
Absolutely. You talk in wonderful detail in your memoir about that marvelous show which debuted in the 1970s, which so many of us enjoyed and have practically memorized word for word. I especially liked one thing you said about the way that your marriage with Emily was crafted in the Bob Newhart show. You said there was the perfect amount of tension, love, and respect to make that marriage feel real. We read those words and we realize so seldom is that balance correctly achieved elsewhere.
Yeah, that pretty accurately describes, the relationship that Emily and I had, and we had respect for each other, and she was independent, but at the same time, dependent in a way on me and me on her.
Hmm. You say that in that show, it's 85% the real Bob and 15% is TV Bob. In other words, we're mostly seeing you. Most of the time when we've seen you on television and film, is that about the right proportion?
Yes. My wife has always said, if the American public ever found out what you were really like, they would never show up. And of course, my response was, and we're going to keep that secret, aren't we? if we want to keep living the way that we're living.
Very good.
I tend to find humor in the. I tend to deal with misfortune humorously.
You also touch at one point about how one of the costs of fame is that you're not necessarily out and about in the grocery store aisles and so on like you once were, and of course it's those real life encounters which generated so much of your material.
Yeah, in a way, your success, which we're all trying to achieve, it kind of cuts you off from the source of your material. And it means you just have to work a little harder at at developing your material and finding it.
Well, you seem to manage to do that. Of course, your later career has also included some dramatic acting, that marvelous run on ER, for instance. Do you hope to do more of that?
Yeah, I would love to, if given the right script. And I was highly complimented that John Wells thought that I was up to that role. That I always call that's my first intentionally dramatic role. there have been other comedic roles I played that turned out to be tragic. That was the first intentionally dramatic role, and so not really based on what he had seen me do, but he just felt I could handle it, and I felt very complimented, and the writing was marvelous.
Well, and the folks who nominated you for an Emmy apparently thought you did a good job as well.
Yeah, apparently.
Very good. For all that you've given the American public, we thank you, and I thank you for writing this wonderful book. I shouldn't even be doing this. A pleasure to speak with you, Mr. Bob Newhart.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much.